Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss The Acolyte, currently airing on Disney+. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by the rest of my slaughtered Jedi friends. Tony Sindelar is here. Hi, Tony.
Why am I slaughtered? I mean, I guess I came on this mission. I accepted the terms.
Yep. Sorry.
Thanks for having me. At least I didn't die alone.
Yeah, I guess that is an upside. Right next to you is Kat Benish. Hi, Kat.
Yord! I saw... what's her name gonna die? Jenna?
Jackie.
I thought that Jackie was gonna die.
Jenna. Sure.
Fine. But Yord, I did not see Yord coming.
Are you...
Spoilers for the episode of The Acolyte we're talking about.
Yeah, well, I assume going in. If you're not...
Let me ask you this question.
Shoot.
Did you know that Yord has a fandom? Like a following? There are people online.
Oh, do you know what the name of it is? Ooh, Yordies?
No.
Yordanians?
Tony, any idea?
I do not know. I'm racking my brain coming up with them.
Yorkies?
That's pretty good. I like it, but no. I have seen this referred to. I don't know how real it is, but
Yordites?
The Yord Horde.
Oh, Yord Horde.
Yord Horde. Shout out to the Yord Horde.
Sorry, Yord Horde.
I bet they're listening.
They turned off after this episode.
Yord has real Figwood energy. Like, very strong Figwood energy.
I think, if anything, death of a character will energize a fandom, right? Untimely death? Yeah,
well,
no.
He may not be dead.
Yeah, he's dead.
He's real dead, Kat.
I did see a thing going around.
He's a guy, so the backdoor works on him.
Yeah, but I did see the conspiracy theory going around that, like, Jackie is part alien, so maybe all her internal organs are in different places, and that's fine.
I read a clickbait article also about Jackie is probably okay, despite being stabbed
three times.
But Yord had his neck snapped, and I don't think there's any excuse for, like, well, maybe his neck just go. He's double jointed in his neck. He can just turn that all the way around.
He just decided to have a nap right then.
Yeah.
He's playing dead. He's gonna come back any minute.
I'm gonna have a lie down.
It was good because that was like the real big energy going into this episode. Like, oh, when we get back, Saul says, when we get back, I'll tell you everything that's going on. And like, oh, he's gonna die. He did not die.
He's the only one.
Everyone else is dead.
Wow.
Dead.
Yeah. It's bad news. So
except for the Beatles. All the Beatles died too. And I have an issue with that one. I'll come back to that later.
To be fair, Saul and Osha are not back on the ship at the end.
That's true.
He's gonna be test like, all right, as I said before, and she's gonna be like, what are you talking about? I mean, totally.
Yeah, yeah.
Smooth.
Yeah.
So this was an amazing episode.
Yeah, so
loved it.
This is episode 5, by the way. Episode 5, Night, which complements the day, which was last week's episode. And it is literally about the day on this planet turning into night. Like, that's the setting, which is done against. Somebody, I don't remember if we talked about it last week, but somebody pointed out that the slash titles from the beginning were maybe when the twins were together. And the singular titles.
Separate.
And now when they're together, there's a one word title, which will be interesting to see.
Yeah.
Next week, they'll be separated against.
Destiny. They were together in Destiny. I guess that kind of works, though.
Yeah.
You're right. It works.
And when they become the same person, it's just going to be a number.
I'm waiting for there to be a thing that pairs with Destiny, I guess.
Mm. Well, we haven't gotten. What I have heard suggested is that episode 7 is directed by the same person who directed the flashback episode.
So that may be the second part of the flashback.
What actually happens on that planet, from May's point of view
or something like that. So there's some interesting narrative stuff they could do from here on out.
Speaking of that, I got a clickbaity article telling me about like all the places that I should go to where they film Star Wars movies to take vacations. Like, yeah, sure. Middle of nowhere, Iceland. That sounds great. Or was it Oslo? Where was it again?
No, it sounded like the fjords.
The fjords. That's lovely. For Hoth. And then there's also Madeira. I did not realize they filmed a lot of this in Madeira.
A bunch of it is in Madeira. Yeah.
You can go to the Yord Fjords.
Yes, Yord Fjords. With the Horde.
Yeah.
they're starting a group trip.
I mean, that's not a bad idea.
Good for them.
Should we
discuss this episode?
No. But where I was going with this is like, I always think like National Geographic and all that. So no, I had a friend who just went on a National Geographic trip to Alaska. And he went on this like multi-day cruise with the family. It sounded amazing.
This is Alaska, real place story. Checks out
real
so
place,
far,
yep.
right, Dan?
Yep. And yep. Cruises, he really, really liked do. It because like there were naturalists on board to talk about, hey, like there's this really cool thing over here and here's a fish that's really cool. And like you could ask them questions.
Details are starting to get sketchy, but still, I'm willing to believe that someone went on a cruise and enjoyed it. Now tell us the less believable part of the story.
Well, I was going to say, it's like, actually, I think I was about to invent something that already exists, which is we should do a cruise just with Star Wars folks and talk about Star Wars.
That almost certainly
that
exists.
That already exists, doesn't it? Yep, never mind.
Yep. Yeah. Better business idea. What if we have a cruise, but you don't go anywhere and you're in a building with no windows?
Just thinking the same thing.
What is that?
Oh, pretend you're on a Star Cruiser and you're in a, but it's actually a hotel.
Yeah. Oh, I fell right for that one.
Yep.
Would you like to invest? Is that what you're saying?
No. Galaxy's Edge, though, is very cool. I would go back.
Do we want to discuss this episode from a very high point of view? This episode is basically just a fight.
Like, No, it's not. It's but mostly Dan, May running. It's May running. Yes. May running.
Dan, also, we know in the language of comic books and pulp serials, which is the language of Star Wars, every fight is a conversation. Dan.
Indeed, that's true.
Yeah.
Sometimes with raised voices.
Wait, what kind of quote is that?
I've adjusted my glasses.
It's a thing, people
really?
Say.
Yeah.
Every fight is a conversation?
Well, a good fight scene.
Are you going to tell our son when he started getting fights in middle school, like, oh, no. This is just a conversation?
In fiction.
In narrative. I don't think it was meant to suggest get into fights. I was thinking, suggesting if you write a good fight scene,
I mean,
there's more going
actually,
on. There's layers.
I meant my statement as textual analysis, not as life.
No, Classmate is like, war is just an extension of politics by their means, right? So I actually think this goes well with most.
This is not
theory.
An original idea that I am purporting to claim credit for. This is a thing. So this is an episode of Star Wars. We attempted to introduce that this is mainly a fight and also May running. Look at how I've united the warring.
You are responding to feedback.
I'm uniting the warring factions here. I'm building peace. But lots of things happen in the woods. Is that what you want to hear?
Yeah.
Basil!
Yeah.
That was not even the top five things I was thinking about.
It starts off with OSHA got knocked away and kind of comes to and sees that basically she has missed, I don't know, the first 30 seconds of the fight. There's lightsabers like just dancing around in the darkness. Jedi that we don't even really get to see die before. We see what's going on. The spooky guy who will later, I guess, introduce himself as a stranger?
He's not introduced yet, but that is how he is credited.
But certainly that's how they're using
the
it.
The stranger. That's
again,
what,
maybe.
Canonically.
I watch with captions, so it was captioned as the stranger. Yeah. We get a better look at his really weird monster helmet.
And I think it's fairly reptilian. It gave me very strong like dinosaur vibes, but also the grin. We should talk about this in a later point. The casting of this is brilliant. I think this is the creepiest and most unsettling Sith we have ever encountered.
I would agree.
I think this will continue through with the performance and the dialogue. It's real hard to do. This is a comic book villain, right? I know Star Wars is not a comic book, but it uses the elements of comic bookery. It's hard to do a comic book villain that is actually scary without like being over the top and kind of ridiculous.
Oh.
And they nail it
they
with
nail
the production
it.
Design of this.
Yep.
And then later when, you know, the mask comes off and more stuff, like this is actually a spooky, spooky villain in a way that is real hard to do. And it is impressive. A lot of, you know, I don't know, a lot of lesser Dark Jedis out there are just a little hard to take themselves seriously. You know, I mean, like, I think Darth Maul is scary for about 12 minutes.
Yeah.
And then, later.
Yeah. Well, can we talk about this? Like, what? And I think it's really interesting to sort of unpack why he's scary. And it kind of is something we've talked a lot about. And so both Hemlock on in Bad Batch and then, I was going to say Bright, or because he's Bright in the show we watched, Dan. What's his actual name?
The actor's name is Anton Lesser.
Anton Lesser and Andor, right?
He's the head of the ISB boss. Yeah.
They're both terrifying. And I think one of the reasons they're so terrifying is both they're competent, they're charismatic, right? Mm. And so everyone is like, oh, I'm going to build this giant machine and I'm going to kill you all because I'm like, that's not scary. But I think
you admire a plan, Kat, right?
Admire a strategy. But I mean, I'm currently reflecting around politics of like the charismatic leaders, like the demagogues. That's terrifying. And so, like, one of the reasons that he is so good, both in mask and out of mask, is that he is there's a degree of unpredictableness, which is always terrifying. Because, like, anything you're always worried, like, are they, there's some really interesting, I'm like going way back to like, some of my sociology work in college of like the idea that we're always constantly acting in a social contract. Anytime anyone sort of like steps out of that social behavior, it makes us very uncomfortable. And he's always right on the edge there. But just the charisma, the like everything, it's just really creepy.
I also want to add to that the physicality.
Yes.
Is yeah. both, again, there's a terrifyingness to it because the way he moves is, it's lethal efficiency, right? He is like, A, he is killing people left and right. Mm-hmm. B, he has an almost alien, he does that thing at one point where walking up when he's still in the mask and he does like the head tilt.
Oh, yeah.
That
yeah.
feels
oh yeah,
alien
like a dinosaur.
And
yeah.
weird.
Yeah.
And
it's like it's a velociraptor so... looking at you and figuring out how many steaks your head is made out of.
You love a girl.
And then I also think that despite the fact that, of course, in the tradition of bad guys in Star Wars, we have a helmet and we have a voice that's been altered. Mm-hmm. Something about the combination of dialogue and the tonality of it makes it, again, creepy and alien. The way he talks to the people, it feels, again, he's just, it's not quite psychotic, but there is like a, like you said, with the social construct, like there's a break.
Yeah.
He is having a,
I will say,
he's in a different reality in some ways.
Yeah. You know, I've already introduced some comic bookery discussion, and I will continue to do so on that later in this episode, and I'll do it again now. You know, I think a villain that I was somewhat reminded of is, and this is a tricky one because a villain that appears a lot in lots of different iterations, but perhaps your better representations of the Joker as just like this sociopath from a world that like he completely rejecting basically the world as we see it and operating by his own insane, demented views. And perhaps I'm picking up on some of that from just the mask that has this grin-like thing on it. But even, you know, we literally have the scene where, you know, a Jedi apprentice, Jackie, is killed. And then he has the line about, like, what? Is that its name?
Yeah.
Or is, you know, like, I mean, just completely kind of unfazed by committing violence to you know, the most vulnerable, basically.
But then
she's still a Jedi, but yes.
I mean, there's A+ to the script writing. I think the script in this episode, even though it was a fighting episode, was excellent. Because I think that's the, like, the use of the it versus her name.
Mm-hmm.
The then immediately turning around and telling his, I guess, Padawan Mei, that she should be more like the woman he just killed. Yeah. And then also several other lines that are just like, oh, when also when Sal confronts the stranger about the fact that he killed Jackie, he's like, well, you brought her here, which is incredibly astute of like, why are the Jedi bringing children to war zones?
I think there's a lot. There's
great
that
script.
Those bits. I liked the bit where the darkness and he has the comment about like, you know, well, what did you do with the darkness inside you to Saul?
Yeah.
Like, and hinting at, like, clearly he knows. And Saul says he seems familiar, though he doesn't necessarily.
And there's some confusing stuff there. Couple people, it's spoiler, it's Chimer, who we've seen in the, and who many of the characters either saw directly or from a distance in the previous episode. So, like, there's before he gets killed, I feel like Yord has this thing where he runs back and it's like, it's you. And I think that's just a, like,
he recognized
the guy
from
the shop.
The shop, yes.
Not from our deep, dark, twisted history.
Yeah, but I think there's something else with Saul.
Oh, I agree.
Saul and Chimer, something else is going on. I even think, you know, the line where, I think it's when where Yord and Osha are running away at one point, when he's like, get the civilian to the ship. And I think it's in there that Yord is saying, like, he doesn't fight fair.
Yes.
And it's like,
he doesn't fight. He has no pattern. He has no.
Yeah,
I always thought. Like, I thought this was.
What have you been doing, buddy?
Well, this is an interesting point that was
all your life.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting point that got brought up in a lot of discussions. Is like, you know, what's the point of having the Jedi out there with like a dozen Jedi and they all get slaughtered by one person?
And again, it's totally the ninja rules. The more Jedi, the less effective any of them are. But I was not expecting so many named Jedi to get
and I think
murdered.
Part of that also belies the idea that they've been kind of existing in a state of complacency at this point.
Yeah.
They are not dealing with dark Jedi or Sith on a regular basis. They are dealing with civilians, people who you draw a lightsaber and they're like,
Bumpkins.
I probably don't want this.
Well, this is the entire question of like, what is the stranger's motivation? And I love the idea too. This is like, well, according to you, I don't exist, right? I can't exist. And
he kind of has the, I just want to be left alone.
Yeah.
I want to do my own thing. I want an acolyte because it's the name of the show. Yeah, I mean, he just, it is that compelling thing also of he has a desire as a villain. I mean, he is extremely villainous. He murders a child, but he has a thing that he wants. It's not, I want to rule the world.
Yeah. You
know, I want to dissolve the Senate so I can run an empire.
But
it's
just,
like, no, I have a thing and you're in the way of it.
Well, and right? It goes back to the whole idea of the practice of religion of like, I just want to go off and do my own thing in my own corner. But as soon as you discover me, like, you have to come.
As Americans, we can relate to that.
Absolutely.
In many ways, parallels
we are
the founding
Christian
of our
society where the Ten Commandments are now required in many. Anyways, yeah. It's fine, Louisiana. Anyways.
But that tie in with with Man Osh's people from the flashback episode is kind of interesting.
Yes.
It makes me wonder if Chimer or the Stranger, I guess, has a tie-in with them, is it something else?
So part of me, I'm going to postulate sort of two out there theories. Like, one is, I think I've said at the beginning, like, there is a world in which Saul was the one who actually went berserk and did all the murder. Right? That is a theory that, like, something happened there and Saul has... I don't know.
Sublimated it? Like,
I don't
really,
know.
Like,
I don't know.
That seems hard.
I agree. And then the second thing is the same... I don't know that... I mean, currently it's being played by the same person. Is there a chance that, like, Saul and Chimer also have a deeper underlying... Like, are they... I wouldn't say twins, but are they siblings?
I heard people suggest that maybe they're siblings.
They're more like father and son age, maybe even.
Yeah.
But Chimer's got to be old. Well, we know
Saul was taken away from his family when he's very young. We heard this in a previous episode. Mm-hmm. So I saw some suggestions being like, well, what if this was a younger sibling who he only knew briefly or something, but wouldn't remember because he was taken away when he was a little kid?
Just checking. The actor who plays Saul is 51. The actor Manny Jacinto is 36.
Yeah, I don't think they're probably parent and child, but I think there is a possible family relationship, but I'm not even convinced about that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a little too Star Wars.
Can we say, so, you know, obviously the last episode didn't really hide that, like, sure looks like Chimer is Captain Spooky Town, a stranger, whatever is secret. He has not yet introduced himself with by the way, I'm going to start going by the name Darth Tyrannus or something that you've read in a novel yet. Really great performance. And, you know, Manny Jacinto, lovely, you know, seems very talented. But if I had watched, you know, if I had just seen The Good Place, which is a delightful show that Manny Jacinto has a major role in, I would not look at that and be like, that guy's going to be a Dark Jedi next.
Well,
and you know, it's pretty impressive is what I'm saying. And good for him. And it's almost a clever bit of it, kind of meta casting where he seems to be playing this, like, kind of
dopey
Star Wars misfit who's fallen in with a bad crowd. Nope. He's secretly, the most evil guy ever.
I think it's both great casting and great performance. And again, I think it goes back to, I think last episode we were joking, like, well, wouldn't that be a turn and unexpected? But I was wondering, like, it'll be good and fine. But I actually think the casting actually makes the Sith role that much scarier. Because, again, it goes back to that psychotic or sociopathic, more rather, charismatic of the guy next door who's super friendly is way creepier than the unknown sort of mass murderer.
There's a bit where he briefly puts the face on again of Chimer when he's talking to them. He does hello or something. And it's creepy and weird.
It's very creepy.
And it's not a thing you do if you're a, you know, normal person, right? Speaking about the twist, I read a couple interviews with Leslie Headland talking about this. And one of them I really liked where she pointed out, like, that she wasn't, she's like, I basically didn't really assume, like, figure people would figure this out. Like, was not trying to hide it in her prediction. She says, I think a good twist is not about hiding everything from the audience and then throwing it on them like, hey, this is what you didn't see. We hit it so well, you didn't see this. I think a good twist is telegraphing what's going to happen, and then once it does, executing it without an ounce of pity or sentimentality. Mm. And I thought that was a great point.
Accurate.
That's right. Like, it's okay if you figured this out. We all, like, kind of came to this conclusion just from economy of characters and, like, logic last week. it doesn't make that revelation any less shocking because of the portrayal of that character.
Yeah.
If he'd come on and cackled and done the whole like supervillain thing, I think we'd all be like, eh, all right, whatever. But the fact that he just comes out of the gate as like, well, gonna murder y'all now, is strong. I mean, and to your point earlier, like, yes, and I think she references this in one of the other interviews I read, like, they kind of ramped up by having the, like, let's kill all the red shirts. And you're like, oh, well, the red shirt's going to die. And then they start killing the, like, named characters, and you're like, oh, what?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think I'm building further for the, like, all record of this mission was just like, putting a burn bag by the Jedi Council. Like, no one ever... Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No. We were saying the same thing. Like, I think that's, it still happens the question of, fundamental question is, there's no one has record of the Sith after this, right? So something happens.
And he does name drop the word Sith, right?
Yes.
Although he says, you know, you might call me Sith.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that could also be sort of a tacit admission, like, hey, this is what you label anything that doesn't fit with your preconceived notions about how this should work.
Heretic.
Yeah. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how this shakes out with, you know, essentially Saul being the only survivor, whether or not he gets back.
May and Osha have kind of parent trapped Saul. Yes.
I did joke. This is the worst parent trap ever.
It does involve a dark Jedi. So it's hecka dangerous.
That the stranger immediately knows that's Osha.
Yes. Yes.
She doesn't have the tattoo.
He makes comments. He seems to be reflecting of sort of the weird twist of fate.
Yeah, yeah.
But Saul interestingly has no idea.
Saul doesn't know. Basil's sniffing around. Yeah, conspicuously.
I am genuinely happy that Basil did not die.
And I think there's an interesting point about this that we were talking about too, and it ties into some of our conspiracy theories from previous episodes, which is we discuss a little bit kind of the ability for them, the Jedi, to sense things. But if Mei and Osha are effectively the same person split into two, might their sort of force aura be the same? But in which case, that's why Saul doesn't.
Their force fingerprint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But their smells are different.
And he never looks at their dramatic forehead tattoo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always check.
He's just like, just force aura,
tattoo.
You know.
Did you get a haircut, he says?
With the lightsaber in a second?
Yeah.
I know. But it's like, it's fresh.
Why does it smell like burnt hair all the time now?
Yeah, but like, if he even gets back to the council,
that is an if.
Yeah, I'm not convinced he will. I'm kind of curious to see how that plays out in terms of like, what does he report? What does he tell them? What are we going to learn about what he already knew? How much of this is like tied up in whatever he's complicit in?
What if Saul becomes Darth Tyrannus?
Darth Tyrannus is Christopher Lee. So that's going to be really difficult.
No, sorry. Is it Christopher Lee who's before? Who trained
Palpatine?
You're
thinking of Darth Plagueis.
Darth Plagueis.
Yeah,
Darth Plagueis the Wise.
Which could be Saul.
He gets murdered by Darth Sidious, so not that wise.
Well,
I guess.
Get a good run.
I don't know. There's some other interesting stuff I liked in this episode. Leslie Headland has shown that she is a huge Star Wars nerd. She brought in Cortosis is the name of the material that his gauntlet and his helmet is made out of.
Oh, it's not
good for him.
It's not
Beskar. No.
Beskar.
It's not Beskar. It's
what's Cortosis? It's
legally distinct Beskar.
It's a thing from. It started in the EU, and she decided to bring it
in. Which part of the EU, please?
I believe the X-wing novels.
No way. Wait, spell it again.
Cortosis.
No,
I believe the first place it appears is in the novel. I'm pretty sure, or is it an X's? It's a, it's I, Jedi, which I think is a Corrin Horn story.
Okay, yeah, but that is not the X-Wing series. I never read I, Jedi, because Corrin Horn is a Mary Sue.
But it's been used in other places as well, including...
Oh, apparently it appears in a bunch of Dr. Aphra comics.
Yeah, as well
that's
as
fine.
Have you read some of the Thrawn Dr. books. Aphra?
But definitely not the Jedi, X-Wings.
So it's basically just a metal that has a way of interfering with lightsabers temporarily.
Okay.
That's all you really know. I think it was also in Knights of the Old Republic too.
It looks like it shows up in a couple of video games. I feel like in part because like they need a thing. So
yeah,
that
you need something
without lightsabers. Can fight. You know,
it was
I mean,
very cool to see. Like, I'm struggling to remember name. Jekka, not Jenny. Jackie?
Jackie.
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 Like, it's not Jackie, which depends on you say Jackie, but you're from New Zealand.
Jackie. 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 That's actually good. Thank you for that. Jackie. Jackie, like, using the giant. Jack. The giant Wookiee lightsaber. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Also, I like how the lightsabers back then are, like, just, like, a little bit chunkier, right?
Yes.
They have not gone through the appleification of the lightsabers to make them smaller and smaller. I did wonder. I was just
Tanaka's is extra aside. Big though. I think.
Yeah. Well, he's got big hands. Yeah.
Yes.
He needs the lightsaber max. Osha does not have a lightsaber. Would she have had a lightsaber? Did she depend on when she left?
Yeah. It's possible she may have been trained with one, but never built one.
Do you think, or even if she had one and you fail out, do you think they take your lightsaber away?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
They break it in two.
Right in front of you.
Just to be clear.
Are the Jedi bad?
If you fail out of the police academy, I think they take your service weapon.
That makes sense. You don't build that.
Some of them are.
Two thoughts kind of unrelated, but one
Wait,
is...
are you drawing a line between Jedi and law enforcement? That seems unfair.
Two thoughts. One is I do love how incredibly consistent we joked about May running. Like every time we cut to May just kept running. Right. I really loved using May running away as character development.
There's a lot of woods. There's so much woods to get through. It took them a day to get there.
And
it's
then
gonna take a day to get out.
Using then like why she took Osha's place as a way to just continue running.
Yes.
The one issue I did have with this episode of where I would think it was logically inconsistent or again like Jedi, really? So I would like to point out when Saul and the stranger are fighting, Saul gets quite emotional, like actually appears angry and upset because Jackie is dead. And I think ever since the beginning, we've known that Saul is probably a little more emotional, like when he was looking back at the holograms or holovids of Osha and Jackie called him out on his attachment issues. So I think there's sort of that's a really good through line there. Saul gets so angry, he actually nearly kills the stranger.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they're like, oh, we don't do that as Jedi. Osha stops him. So instead, they attach him with a light and let all the beetles take him away, knowing full well that he's just going to kill the beetles. So, like, the Jedi aren't the ones who want to kill him directly, but the Jedi are totally cool with other life forms dying on their behalf.
Well, that was mainly Osha.
I have a question with that.
Just kill him.
Just kill him.
There are some very strong parallels to, like, Batman the Joker, where it's like, haha, I don't have a gun, therefore you can't murder me. By the way, I just murdered 500 people, and I'm going to murder 500 people tomorrow. Haha!
Yeah.
They should have just killed him
in the
moment.
And I think that's probably an interesting...
Or knocked him out, or...
Yeah, why give him to the Beatles, right? It's like, we're going to do this chaotic thing where a lot of other, like, living creatures are going to die. Why? Why did you choose that option?
I was mainly willing to excuse it for, we need a way for this fight to end without any more people dying, narratively.
But Chekhov's
yeah,
Beatles.
Yeah, Chekhov's Beatles.
Yeah, the Beatles were not my favorite part of this, but I did like, you know, Osha tries to stun him. It doesn't work, which I thought was also a scary bit. And I think that moment of Saul is like, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, like, it's the Jedi Code thing, right? And I think it is Saul getting swept up in it, and I think we're going to learn more about him and why maybe he struggles with that. And trying to not descend to the same level as this guy, even though it would be the right, potentially right thing to do. I don't know. But it's an interesting character moment, and I liked it.
And justify the means.
I don't think the Jedi's believe that, though.
I know, I'm kidding. I'm very being sarcastic. Clearly, they do not.
But I think it's an interesting...
The ends don't even justify the paperwork for the means. It's, you know.
A couple other things I liked that were mentioned in some of the other things I read. The design, aside from the helmet, all he's got is the helmet and the gauntlet. And they're like, well, why doesn't he wear any other armor? And like, I think Leslie Headland's like, imagine you're the guy going into this thing, like, I don't even plan on getting hit. That kind of confidence and kind of awesome.
He did murder like a dozen of theoretically the most powerful people available in the galaxy.
He's got that dagger lightsaber, which was really cool and kind of creepy. And they pointed out he has a different style of fighting where he turns the saber off. sometimes, mm-hmm. which is also kind of...
Well, and you point out he does one-handed fighting, too.
Yes, a lot of it, he is fighting one-handed, and all the Jedi are fighting two-handed.
Very interesting.
Which is also really just an interesting style difference. There is a video going around, by the way, of Manny Jacinto training for this, and if anything, it is cooler than that fight. Because
really?
It's all, like, wide shot, like, one movement. As there's no cuts or anything. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of badass. Like,
I'll have to watch that.
Yeah, I think that there is, to your point earlier, talking about Yord saying there's no, you know, he doesn't fight the way we expect him to. Like, I think that is interesting in talking about, again, the status where the Jedi are now. They don't fight things. They're just being trained. It's like if you were in stage combat and somebody threw you into a knife fight. Like, that's not how people really fight when they're trying to kill you.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's
interesting. And it's not fair, Dan, when that's how it is. Yeah. It's not fair.
It really isn't.
Should we finish the recap or what? Kidding.
I think we covered most of the points.
I mean, there was less of a plot of this one, more of just like fight.
Chimer's motive of... everybody saw my face, therefore I have to kill all of you. Oh, but also great.
Great line, though.
Pretty good.
Well, I think the two things are like, well, I did try to wear a mask.
Yeah, that's a good bit. It's a funny line.
And then also...
I mean, again, for an episode that's all fighting, there's a decent amount of Q&A in it, which is
Yes. They do lots of little short fights.
What's this whole
really
show
good.
About again? You know?
And then speaking of which, we did not really talk about the fact May and Osha have a discussion at the end.
No, I was, oh, gosh.
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail you.
I'll come back to it. It's fine. Keep going.
But the discussion at the end is a little weird. I mean, I wonder if May has been, like, brainwashed or programmed or something horrible because, like, I felt a little bit like there was a weird dotted line from like, I'm on the path to like surfing, you know, the stranger. This is garbage. I'm leaving. And like, I'm running away through the woods. And then she and Osha are back together. And she's like, you're wrong about everything. You should come with me. And it's like, maybe you should go with her. Cause like, you just had your like crisis of evil faith.
I did wish they were doing
a little bit. I'm willing to believe that she has a lot of feelings that are exploding in that moment, I guess.
Yeah, I think I wish they did a little more of a trying to understand, because clearly, again, I think they have different perspectives of what actually happened back on their home planet.
Yes.
I wish they kind of realized that and talked through that. Like, what do you mean you think I'm the one who killed, like, mom? Like, you had killed, like, but they didn't. But sort of the classic miscommunication driving the plot.
But the idea that each of them believes the other person has been kind of brainwashed is intriguing, especially because... I think it reflects what the show is trying to do with the Jedi not necessarily being good, right? It goes into this idea of they both come in like, what are you talking about? The Jedi are evil. Like, if you kind of like flip that switch in your brain where you're like, let's pretend for the sake of argument that the stranger is just like, hey, I just want freedom, man. Like, I'm just doing my own thing. And May is like, look, the Jedi came and took you away. And that's not great.
I've been radicalized by YouTube. Yeah.
He's been red lightsaber pilled.
I don't believe, I think all taxation is theft. And
I do. I think it's not quite the same as both of them think the other one was brainwashed. I think May thinks and Osha thinks May was brainwashed. May knows, I think, to some degree that she was brainwashed. That's why she's trying to get out. I think what's different is like Osha thinks it's really that conversation about Saul's relationship with Osha. That's what I think is really going on there. May doesn't challenge the fact that she wants to leave the stranger.
I think there's also a differentiation between the fact she's decided she doesn't, May decides she doesn't want to kill all these people, but also she does think the Jedi were responsible for what happened.
Yes.
Like, I think both of those are kind of true, which is she doesn't necessarily want to go as deep as she's already gotten herself in, but she does think that these people essentially, like, ruined her life.
Yeah. And to go back to, which I'm guessing we will, a future episode, we'll literally go back to it and maybe expand on it further. I mean, that conflict of between May and Osha leaving the planet is one where basically like May is saying, why would you not stay with me and our family here? And Osha saying, but I've been given the opportunity to be like a superhero space cop. Why can't you be happy for me and see that that's awesome? And it's like, so you would give up all of this? And she's like, well, actually, I don't really care for this. And that's hard. That's hard for me to hear.
Yeah. I think going back, sorry, jumping a little brown here. I think the thing I was going to say earlier too is like one thing that is interesting to me too about the story. We've always talked like why there's so many masks in the Star Wars universe. So one thing that we keep hearing, I think at least twice, Keimer saying is, I don't want you to read my mind. The idea that the Jedi need to be able to see someone eye to eye. It's something that kind of feels like new canon. Someone should write in and let us know that's not true.
I think the cortosis is also supposed to be a part of that.
It's possible.
I just, you know, helmets protecting you from stuff is, you know, goes back. And the Magneto's
helmet does that too, yeah.
Oh, man. So. We were driving home today and totally unrelated. We saw a, like, 20-year-old coming down one of the streets near our house, Tony, with the lip on a scooter, probably about 10, 15 miles an hour, flip basically over the handlebars, was not wearing a helmet. I think they're fine. We help them get to the hospital, but like everyone should always wear helmets. And that's like, that's why like both, whether you're a Sith or like a biker or on a scooter.
I agree. Once again, Kat, you and I are united. 2/3 of this podcast believe always wear helmets. Dan, rebuttal.
I'm wearing a helmet right now.
That's a good idea for when you're dealing with the two of us.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Protects your brain from bad ideas.
I did want to go back to a comment we talked about with Saul and the attachment issue, because it plays into this comment that I wanted to reference from our Incomparable Member Discord from Joe V.
Are you jumping to listener mail?
No, this is not really mail.
Okay.
But I wanted to talk about this first.
You're citing your
listener
sources.
Email. Listener thing said on a Discord that is not connected to this
Dan's
podcast.
Not going to pass off your thinking as his own. He's going to cite your sources.
I did cite my sources from Joe V.
Okay.
Yeah. Just remember, if you have ideas and you share them on the web via the social contact you're participating in,
I'm coming for you.
Dan will take them and give you full credit.
Yeah, that's right.
If your ideas are that good.
Doing capitalism all wrong, Dan.
We are also making very little money off this.
Yeah.
Joe pointed out, he said, I have a few questions about the Jedi philosophy. The Sith seem to focus on quote-unquote dark emotions like hatred and anger, while their Jedi quote-unquote opposites seem to want to deny all emotion as a path of the Force. Are there any orders that embrace emotions like joy and love? I thought this was a fascinating question because it
Space
is.
Nuns.
Well, the best example I could come up with is Kanan. Because Kanan has a family, and Kanan like he has Hera, and he has later on there is a kid. I mean, but like he sacrifices himself to save his family. And I thought like he is the closest to like sort of a well-adjusted person.
Interesting,
in Jedi.
He too. Then also like going back to Rebels, like he then does he become a Force ghost? He becomes a Force wolf.
Yeah, we never, the only time he ever, his voice appears in Rise of Skywalker with all the other voices. But yes, the wolf thing does come up.
Which speaks more to, again, then going back to the sort of the whole trilogy of the Force. That's a really interesting point.
And the only other example I could come up with, and I don't think it quite works as well, is like I had kind of hoped maybe that's where they were going sort of post-sequel trilogy with Rey, is maybe trying to find a new approach that's not the Jedi approach. Because I think this is something that a lot of the newer Star Wars material has tried to deal with is, are these things really incompatible, or is there a different way of doing it? Or are the Jedi wrong?
Because the Luke Skywalker way is you have to live on an island by yourself.
And again, that's the Kenobi Yoda lineage, right? It's like, ascetic. I must withdraw.
Right.
And I think Luke comes to the conclusion at the end.
I can't be happy. No one can be happy.
Luke comes to the conclusion at the end that it's the wrong approach.
I think there are other creatures on the scene. I believe there's a cut scene from that movie where there's like a party going on the beach with some like the little mug frogs. Am I making this up?
I don't remember.
It's a cut scene. It's there.
Oh, with the nuns? The
yes.
I don't remember.
There's a cut scene where there's like basically a party on the beach and like, so he's not, Luke is not totally, but anyways, but yes, yep. I think Tony, you're gonna pull in some comic book stuff here, right?
So I think we have the representations of these factions, and because all I can think about today is DC Comics, it reminds me of the various Lantern Corps in Green Lantern. Green Lantern, of course, is your good Lantern Corps. You know, the what Green Lantern?
Some of the other ones are good.
Wait, what's a Lantern Corps?
So the Green Lantern Corps are space cops, basically.
They're space cops.
Oh, Corps, like so, C-O-R-P. Yes. Yeah. Okay, not C-O-R-E.
Yeah, like the
okay.
Marine Corps. Yeah. So, and at first, I don't know how long it is before they introduce the Yellow and Red Lantern Corps, but at first, there's just the Green Lantern. They have their magic rings that let them do stuff, and they are technically channeling...
Willpower?
Yeah. Willpower is their thing. And then, I'm not giving an accurate timeline of comics history, but Sinestro is a Green Lantern who goes bad. And he starts the Yellow Lantern Corps. And then I know later there is the Red Lantern Corps, which this feels closer to your Star Wars parallel, where the Red Lantern Corps are about anger and hate. But what I appreciate later is that they basically discover, like, all the colors of the rainbow are represented and represent different elemental forces.
So it becomes like Inside Out, like all the different emotions.
A little bit.
Sort of.
Yeah.
But imagine each emotion, instead of just being one guy, is like a team of guys doing stuff. So like orange is greed, pink is love, blue is hope.
It's calmness or serenity or something. Serenity, like that.
Yeah. So they're not all good or bad. Some of them are just emotions that have different.
And the
places.
Black Lantern's death, but that's not really an emotion.
Yeah. No, I think they in fact all team up against the Black Lantern.
They're evil. They're like corrupted.
And there are even. There are some good stories about, like, a Red Lantern Corps member who quits the Red Lantern Corps and finds, a different way.
I'm just imagining the Corps. We're ennui.
Yeah.
That's the Beige Lantern Corps.
Yeah. No, and Puce Lantern Corps. So, I think it is, like, guess what? This is, ultimately, Star Wars is a commentary, The Acolyte is a commentary on the failures of the two-party system. Is there another way to do things?
Oh man, Rainbow Jedi,
Green Party,
yeah. Jerks on the internet love Gray Jedi, which are like. That's Jedi weird. That also murder people or something.
Wait, what?
Jedi is like a whole like theory about
like Jedi that could be not, bounty hunters. I don't know. Jedi that are
they're not dark Jedi and they're not the Jedi.
Again, going back to previous conversations, like I feel like I'm entirely offline sometimes, and I think I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think that's the right.
I think everybody could be more offline.
Don't tell people to not listen to the podcast, though. Yeah. That's not what
you'll
we
let Dana edit that part out.
All I do is read the Boston Globe and look at Zillow. That's most of my life.
Do we have anything else that we want to say about this episode?
It was great.
Nope.
Loved it.
Yeah, fight choreography is great,
remember,
by the way.
Remember when we weren't certain about the show?
Yeah.
Now it's like,
I am really invested. This episode, I think, really, it was
fun.
It was a great example of an episode that it's not very long. There's not a ton of dialogue, but I found it riveting. Like, I could not tear myself away.
I have not checked in if Star Wars bros are still mad about it on the internet. I assume so.
Do you have a little pen of them that you check in with?
No.
How are you guys feeling tonight?
I forgot to feed them in quite a while, but I did see a clickbaity headline that apparently, as an indicator of their review bombing work, the first three episodes of The Acolyte have more reviews submitted than three seasons of The Mandalorian. So
okay,
yeah,
I guess that's a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I will say when this episode
good
opened
job,
up,
jerks.
This episode, I at one point I was like, and now to Tatooine for the Mandalorian.
Yeah.
man, this is good. This is like, I think so far this is my favorite series other than Andor.
It's pretty good.
I really loved the first season of the Mandalorian.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was really
great,
but like.
And I love that one episode of The Mandalorian in Boba Fett.
It's a good episode. I thought this was really great. I thought the production was good.
What a weird way to make TV.
I don't know.
You guys have so much money and you can't figure out what show you're making?
I feel like they all just showed up like one day the casting sheets got screwed up and they're like... I guess it's part of the Boba Fett show now. It's fine. Just do it.
Yeah,
go live.
I want to mention the fight choreography again. I thought was really great.
Was
There's
good.
A couple really good scenes, including the one where the stranger stabs a guy and then pulls another guy onto that lightsaber. Boy,
unsporting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, definitely stuff, if that was if this was an officially managed fight, that would have been some kind of
some violation of foul, some kind of
red card. Yeah, you can't murder two guys at once in official Jedi combat rules.
Unfortunately, he also killed the referee. So
yeah, they-
I'll say good fighting, but also really good editing. I think those two things went hand to hand. There was at one point I think we actually went back and rewatched it. Is when Saul is about to kill Chimer, and Osha shouts at him. If you watch it, you're watching Chimer, and then they cut, but they literally cut maybe 5 feet away to the side, so you're still looking at him, but it literally changes your frame of reference.
It's a two shot on Saul.
Sorry, where, on Saul. Yeah, on
you're
Saul,
looking
yes.
at his face, and then it kind of does a jump
to the
and
side.
It's a fascinating little bit where it's like it's almost like he comes to.
Yeah, so it's literally the same shot, but it jogs you enough that it's a very nice little like he is. It's fascinating. Like little things like that was just very. The editing and the shooting was really, really well done in this episode, and the fighting was really good, the styling and all that. But like you need the editing to make that work.
Yeah,
I think that's one thing that Ahsoka was lacking. It was like that fighting was just it was one shot, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah, yeah. Should we do some mail?
Let's do some mail. Sure. Yeah.
Okay. We got some emails. Oh, even more have come in since last I checked. All right. Let's start with these are emails to acp@theincomparable.com. Feel free to email us there. Raphael writes in.
Hi, Raphael.
Subject, is it a twist if we all know the twist? Hello, podcasters. I groaned you guys when Jacksonville Jaguars Jason said, you really didn't know it was me? I fully thought he was a red herring. Then I thought, well, mind control is in play. They did show us before, and May pointed out that her mom could, quote, get in the mind of a Jedi. So there is a chance that Chimer is being remote controlled, and he is, in fact, a red herring. But now I think, no, it's just him. Also, what I really wanted to say, what even is a Sith in 2024? Do they know they're bad? Because Jason is all like, I want is freedom, and you all oppress me. That does tie in well with the witches from before. But I've been led to believe that the Sith is a loaded term. Does he come from the line of old Sith lords? Does he share their objectives? Who trained him? What was May's training like? Because she hasn't even mentioned Sith, even though Jason said it was like a no biggie. Is there a way to answer any of the questions the show has posed without an infinite regression and more questions like this episode caused? I love the podcast, love Chaos, and look forward to hearing your thoughts on this whole thing. 2 points, which I thought were interesting. One, there is a bit in the one of the earlier episodes where May apparently has a line that is a quote of the Sith code where she basically says peace is a lie, like the Jedi say peace, like the Jedi want peace, but peace is a lie, which is part of the like a little canonical Sith code thing. Second thing, and this did get pointed out several places online, which I thought was fascinating, right at the end when the stranger is covering up Osha, the music in the background is Kylo Ren's theme.
Yeah.
Don't know what to do with that. There have been people suggesting that he might be Ren of the Knights of Ren, which would be is a character who has appeared in the comics, I guess.
What?
The Knights of Ren are the ones that, like, Kylo Ren's flunkies that show up a couple times in the sequel trilogy. They really
Wouldn't
only show up in the last
the
movie.
Would they just be the Knights of him? Kylo Ren?
No, I think the point is Kylo Ren killed...
It's named after him.
He's killed the original Ren who founded these, like, dark side... People.
They don't get into that in the movie at all, do they?
They barely touch on it.
No. It's like a thing that's in like source books, the companion books for the
It's
the
like
thing,
the Book of the Whales. Cool. interesting. Yeah, no, I think Raphael's making some great points. And that's kind of why I go, I will be interested to see if they associate them. Again, the line is you would call, well, I think Dan, you quoted it better than I did.
I think it's you might, or the Jedi might call me Sith. You might call me Sith.
Better call Sith.
You can call me Tim.
Yep. I do again wonder how much again it doesn't quite work because they say they haven't seen any Sith in thousands of years, but there is a world where I could see the Jedi basically again using the term Sith as a way to disempower and destroy anyone who opposes them, right?
It's
like that, again going back to the term heretic and sort of the organized religion point of view.
Yeah. I think it is interesting. I would like to know, and I don't know if we'll get into this, like where did he come from?
He sure seems like somebody trained him, or he is an amazing self-taught murderer.
Well, they make a comment. Doesn't Saul make a comment at some point about like you wield a Jedi weapon or you something like that, but you're not a Jedi? I don't know. He has a comment about something like that, which feels very, again, loaded. Was this guy a Padawan who left? Like
another Padawan of Saul?
I think that would be really bad, dude. You're really fixated on that other student that you really liked, but don't remember me? I turned in my classwork on time every week. He's that one little kid who's like, I see fire. Ooh, we got to take her out of here. Let me. Anyway, good questions. Pete writes in.
Hey, Pete.
My subject, my Sith helmet. Kat, Dan, Tony, love the show. Excited to hear your thoughts, Ray. All the, white text spoiler stuff here, which is really hard to read in dark mode. Pretty shocking deaths in episode 5. Made the text white, too, in case whoever's reading hasn't seen it yet. Gotta say, love Manny Jacinto as the Sith Lord. They're dangerously close to having actual fun, which is probably my main complaint with Star Wars in general. Anyways, you asked for what your Sith Lord helmet would look like.
Yes.
In a bit of synergy with the season finale of Doctor Who, the original Sutekh helmet, picture attached, is pretty rad. I'd probably replace the color with spooky glowing highlights and pare down the overall size 20%, but otherwise this is my go-to design. Thoughts? May the Force be with you. Insert cats always. Pete in Minneapolis. That's kind of a dope helmet. I don't know. Tony, you saw this one?
It reminds me a little bit.
Is it the 70s ones? Yeah, it's the 70s Doctor Who.
It's very Pharaoh-esque and kind of reminds me of the Gould from Stargate Atlantis.
Yeah, a little
Stargate.
Bit.
Are you familiar with who Sutekh is in Doctor Who?
No, not at all.
He's the Egyptian god of death, except the idea is that he's, you know, he's lived beyond that as a, you know, is he a god or an alien that has ultimate power? But yeah, he's one of those you would not find him charismatic as a villain, Kat, in that his whole thing is just I want everything to die. So
again, doesn't
have a good plan. Yeah, so he is not checking any of the boxes on your villain list. He wants the entire universe to be dead and doesn't have a great plan for getting there. Spoiler, Doctor Who beats him.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
It's a good look. I like it. It's distinct.
Yeah.
I agree.
Oh, by the way, with the Manny Jacinto praise, and Tony, you called him out earlier saying, like, I'm not sure I would have pictured it. I saw a little tidbit with him where he talked about, like, enjoying doing that flip between those two characters, the Chimera to the Sith Lord character, and it's really effective, and it reminded me, we talked about it. We had kind of talked about this in an earlier episode, the one where Mei pulls the knife on him, and he gets out of it, and we're like, there's something else going on with this guy.
Something else in there. I will say, I mean, so, I guess tiny spoilers for future stuff. I don't know, Dan, do you know this? You're more likely to know this than Kat because you follow this kind of news. David Harwood is supposed to be in this show.
David Harwood is supposed to be in this show somewhere.
Who is David Harwood?
And I know him mainly from playing in the Supergirl show. He is Martian Manhunter. Yeah.
Nope.
And so, you know, he can be a big imposing guy with a deep voice. I was like, oh, maybe he will be the Sith guy. We haven't seen him yet. And that's I'm hoping he gets more than 5 minutes of time.
Yeah.
But yeah.
He was in Robin Hood.
He was Friar Tuck.
Everyone was in that Robin Hood show.
Yeah, everyone was in that Robin Hood show.
Yeah.
I forgot. I saw he listed on the cast list and I was like, he's great. And I don't know what his role is
kind of way. And you know, so he could still be somebody important in especially in a flashback. I mean, you could imagine, like, we haven't seen who Saul's master is or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's amazing. He's currently the president of RADA, which is really impressive.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. He was on Homeland too for the first few seasons.
Is he secret British? Is that
He's 100% British.
Okay.
Yeah.
He plays a little, I've only ever seen him play roles that are not spoiler, Martian Manhunter. It's Martian, not British, but also the version of Martian Manhunter is he's like Martian Manhunter pretending to be an American. He's double acting.
The suit he's wearing on his Wikipedia page deeply implies that it's like it's too well cut not to be British.
Wow.
Sorry, I really enjoyed
American.
I really enjoyed that. In he appeared on Celebrity Mastermind with specialist subject Philip Pullman's His Dark Materials. Fascinating. And then he was in the BBC film adaptation of the other Philip Pullman novels, The Ruby and the Smoke.
I've never read those.
They're good. Anyway.
Yeah, be interested to see who that is.
Yeah, he was in Doctor Who, too. Who wasn't, though?
That's a small island.
Jay writes in, with subject line, red shirts. OMG, what just happened? So last week in episode 4, the Jedi put together an away team to capture Mei, and as you mentioned on the podcast, it consisted of a suspiciously large number of Jedi we weren't familiar with.
Cannon fodder.
And in my mind, yeah. I immediately categorized them as red shirts, present purely to be dispatched by Mei, Chimera the Sith, or the deadly flora and fauna of the spooky forest world. So I was quite enjoying the fight and watching the red shirts being dispatched as expected. Particular shout out to the Sith Force pull 2-for-1 lightsaber impaling move.
Yep.
And then the writers just go berserk. I guess in hindsight, seeing Carrie and Moss's Indara buying the moisture farm before even the title card of the first episode should have prepared us, but it was still a shock. Even the handheld droid doesn't survive this week's episode, although at the end...
Basil saves Pip.
Is anyone going to make it out of the show? There's still 3 episodes to go, and we only have 4 principal characters left. Maybe one of those episodes will be another flashback episode? Brilliant stuff. I'm thoroughly enjoying the show, even more so than I was the first week. May the Cortosis helmet and armor be with you.
Maybe in the next episode, they're going to have to introduce like a bunch of new characters to like pad this out.
Need more Jedi. Yeah. If I have a comment, it was, do you remember Yord had a Padawan?
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She appears in one scene.
Didn't get super attached.
Yeah. That is one of the moments where I thought there was probably a little bit of like economy of characters that could have been played like with... With Saul and Jekki and Yord.
Oh, no, I liked it. Like, why not have more characters?
Well, why isn't his Padawan come?
Are you materially somehow hurt that there was a character that you only saw in one scene in one episode?
It felt superfluous a little bit.
It's television.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying.
Maybe they come back.
Maybe they do. I guess we'll find out. We also still, I will say, there is one other character that we do kind of know, who is Vernestra, who we haven't seen, and who is...
Who's that again?
The Green Lady.
Green Lady,
Saul's going to have to come back
I
and be like,
still
so,
don't
all,
trust her.
All those Jedi you gave me to go to this planet, they just, they went somewhere else. They left.
Beatles.
They decided they don't want to be Jedi
so
anymore.
So many Beatles.
And like, especially her whole thing is that she's like a super gifted Jedi, right? Like that she's a very young, for her rank, kind of...
Because she's their like interface with the council.
I'm just saying, maybe she has new ideas about how to do a lot of things.
Maybe she's the Sith Master.
Well, maybe she's been training people in a new alternate Jedi education program that features hats made of cortosis.
Very specific. Tristan writes in the acolyte.
Hi, Tristan.
Hello again, ACP. I have some questions about Mei and her motivations. She decides to surrender herself to the Jedi, then tries to kill Jekki with a knife. She says her loyalty is to her sister, but then knocks her out, takes her place, and leaves her unconscious in a forest full of dangerous creatures. Not to mention someone is bound to notice the tattoo on her forehead. Oh, and I guess you can kill several Jedi, including one with your bare hands, but if you don't have a weapon in your hands, the Jedi can't harm you. This feels more like anime nonsense than competent writing. Anyway, keep up the excellent podcasting. This is where I would put my obligatory jab at Biff, but I don't have one at the moment. P.S. I wouldn't be surprised if someone figures out it's not Osha because Mei doesn't have the arm tattoo, despite Mei having a face tattoo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think fundamentally for me, Mei says a lot of things, but her sort of like her stated preferences versus her revealed preferences, Mei only cares about herself.
Yeah,
at least that's what I take away from it. Or like, and I wonder if her like again, her insistence on having Osha with her is less about like actually wanting to spend time with Osha, but a sense of like power, need, and like almost dominance.
And again, that it's I think there's an argument that she's part of her and feels in some way incomplete without her.
Oh yeah, we didn't mention there was the call. Osha heard the voice again that pulled her back, and that's why they had to go back. Again, that child
yes,
voice.
Yes, that's right. When she and Yord are heading to the ship, she decides to go back because she hears a voice. Yeah. I think Mei is fairly consistent in that she is just trying to escape. Like, and I think the thing with Jekki is mainly like, yes, she did say she was going to surrender, but like the stakes have changed at this point, right? There was the stakes where she's like, hey, I know I killed some Jedi, but I can go and like basically like turn state's witness and talk about my boss. Now my boss showed up and killed a lot of other Jedi, and also this other Wookiee Jedi was here who was already dead, and now everyone's going to blame me for that too, and now you're coming at me to arrest me. I am just going to fight my way out of this. That makes perfect sense to me. But yeah, and then I think after that she's just like, there's no win for me here. I just need to get away from all of these people, preferably with my sister, but if not, I don't care. So I don't know what her plan is. I'm kind of torn between the, is she this Jedi she has stowed away with is the last person on her kill list.
Yeah, it is a little weird because I felt like, we haven't gotten to be inside her brain, seeing her voice out all of her decisions. Because she changes her mind a lot in between this episode and last, including this one where it's like, finally, you're reunited with your sister and real quick cobbles together a plan to like, actually, I'm going to take your place and probably do something not legit, right? Rarely do you steal identity for purposes of like paying back a loan or something like that.
Yeah. I think my kind of working theory right now is that she's going to try to expose Saul in some way.
Mm.
Like, I don't think she's going to try to kill him, but I think she might try to...
You think there's going to be a meeting with a lot of yelling at the Jedi Council?
Or she's going to put him into a situation where he has to confess whatever secret he has and essentially ruins him. Mm-hmm. But I don't think she's going to try to kill him. She would have... It would be very easy, right, in some ways. I mean, she's killed several Jedi already. This guy thinks that she's his former Padawan. Mm-hmm. Like... You could just wait till he goes to sleep and just stab him. I mean, I don't think it'd be that hard.
And she seems to have freed herself from the "I have to do it without a weapon" for reasons.
Yeah,
nonsense.
But I do think the irony, though, is that if she ends up killing him without a weapon, thus completing her training, there feels like that might be the path we're going down.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't really know.
I would not be surprised. Anyways,
guys, listeners, I just want you to know. If a job requires you to commit 4 murders, it's probably a scam.
Almost certainly.
2 murders,
before you get hired, 4 murders, way out.
Yeah, 2 murders are okay. 3?
You know, they're probably incorrectly classifying you as a contractor when it should be a W-2. Everything about it is sketchy.
I feel like we're going to come back to the thing, though, of like killing without a weapon, because that was such a big deal with the first few episodes. For us not to come back to that feels weird. It's been a motivation, right? And like, maybe it was... It is just a good motivation that just sort of like, it was fun, but maybe it wasn't meant to be a red herring, but it's weird.
I'm curious if in a flashback, we will spend more time with May and the stranger.
I don't think we have to.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know what is the show actually about, but it does seem like it seems like we will probably see more of the May Osha story from the May perspective, but then probably also
where did May go? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
David writes in, provocative space otters. Hi, guys. Thank you for mentioning the Galactic HoloNet webpages. From what I remember, it was an in-universe webpage they published for marketing in the run-up to Attack of the Clones. The one article that was stuck in my memory described how a manufacturer was limiting the warranty on astromech rocket packs to 20 years, which conveniently explains why R2-D2 couldn't use it in A New Hope. What really was burned in my brain, though, had to do with Solonians. I didn't recognize the cover, but I was sure I'd been to the Wikipedia page to read the synopsis. There's a drawing of a space otter with a bikini, which he describes as certainly a choice.
Oh, no.
There's a lot happening in this picture, and I don't know.
The expression on Kat's face is impressive. So,
probably not anymore. No, I need this. Thank you. I need my iPad.
That is an uncomfortably sexual otter.
I think everyone agrees.
Oh, gosh. For the otter? Yeah, the otter is very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think he's got the archive to the rocket droid warranty recap. All right, couple posts on Mastodon where you can find us at acp@zeppelin.flights. And now I have to back up a little bit to figure out where we were. Michael wrote in, thanks for another great episode.
Hi, Michael.
And I think this is where I stole this, so apologies, Michael. For singular titles of The Acolyte, is it because the twins are now together in the story? That was my assumption. Yes, Michael, I thought that was a really astute point. Hence, I mentioned it. Sorry for not citing you earlier. I didn't remember where I had seen it, but it's a
social contract. It's fine. Move on.
Yeah.
Hidden Jester writes in, I think most of the meaning behind lightsaber colors is decanonized EU content, as you mentioned in the episode. The modern Marvel comics do say that Sith kyber crystals are bled to turn them red and can be healed. I think it's also discussed in the Ahsoka novel. I don't think yellow versus blue versus green versus purple have current canonical meaning, but Sith, red, and Ahsoka's pure white / silver ones do. And I bet we'll learn the meaning of orange, like Balin and Shins, in Ahsoka Season 2. And then we have several part one from Grim Ghost, who writes, "So, love the show, listen all the time. I'm an old person and have read a ton of both canon and non-canon stuff. On your last
Welcome,
episode,
you're among friends.
You talked a lot about Sith. The Darth Bane series, 3 books, describes the history of the Sith and the rise of the Rule of Two. Fun read, even if it's no longer canon. It explains the temples and holocrons and why there aren't lots of Sith around. There is a canon book about Sidious and Plagueis. It's not great. Reads like an encyclopedia entry. But when you talked about red lightsabers, and I don't know all the lore about the meaning of all the different colors, I leave that to my daughter. There was an excellent Darth Vader comic series where Sidious explains that to make kyber crystals produce a red blade, it had to be tortured using the dark side of the Force. It suggested the crystal had some sentience. Anyway, I don't normally write in, but love other fans and listen weekly. Keep up the great work. Lastly, loving the Acolyte. Can't wait to see where they're going to take the show, and I always look forward to your comical banter and recap each week." And he also, for reference, sent us the link to the Bane books.
But has he seen Moonlighting?
It didn't come up.
But good comments, though. Again, good comments.
Lyle writes in.
Hi, Lyle.
Tyrannus agreed is related to the Tyrrhenian Sea, but it's ancient Greek and then later Latin, and probably from something older still. Anyone not Greek was considered Tyrrhenian. I personally think that it relates to Tyre, the center of the Phoenician world, arguably the origin of Western civilization, which the Greeks were aware of. It was an island until Alexander got angry at them and ended all of that with long spears and really a lot of rocks. I know all of this because of a Dark Sun game I was running and went on a long, long research tangent that never informed the game at all, except maybe vibes.
I did see this tweet beforehand, and I genuinely loved it.
Oh, wow.
There's so much in there. I don't know where to go, but it's great, Lyle.
No,
I love it.
Oh, man, I've been there, Lyle. Like, specifically there, to that street address. We own property in the same
in the city
town.
Of Tyre.
It's, you know, in the city of foolish research for Dark Sun campaign.
Yeah, I'll just point out Tyre is tier with an E on the
tier,
end.
Yeah, yes, yes. Yeah,
congratulations again to both of you for completing your Dark Sun campaign.
Did we ever really finish anything? Yeah. Phil wrote, "Can't wait for this week's pod." That's all you wrote, Phil. Here it is.
Wow, that gets you on the show?
Mission
I guess
accomplished.
So. You posted us, I'll read it. Peter writes in, "Hi, Peter. Knew May did the old switcheroo, but I still scrubbed through past episodes to spot Osha's tattoo, Basil nose, and surely Darth Mendoza does too." By the way, the number of, I've seen Darth Bortles, I've seen Darth Mendoza, I've seen Darth Biceps. I think all of these are great. I have no comments with any of them.
Isn't it great when we collectively as a culture come up with many great ideas? And then figure out among the great ideas which are we going to converge on. It's just
I like
it's,
Darth
it's,
Mendoza.
It's great to see. See, I like Darth Biceps, you know, or Darth Bortles.
Bortles is good too.
Somebody also pointed out somewhere, and I apologize for whoever said this. I think it was in the Incomparable chat again, but they said it's great to see that Manny Jacinto has gone from playing a idiot pretending to be a religious figure to a religious figure, religious zealot pretending to be an idiot.
Yep.
When did he pretend to be a religious figure?
He's a
that's
monk
the whole thing.
In the
oh,
good
that's
place.
Right. That's right.
Well, he's not.
He's not
spoilers
a monk,
for the good place.
But
he's not a monk.
To
but
be
he's
a
taken
monk.
The identity of a monk.
Sorry. All I have to say is he was so good in that role on The Good Place that I had to actively stop myself from ever going to look up any interviews with him because I could not stand to see his real like that he was not that person because he was so convincing.
You
I didn't
you don't
want the illusion
believe,
shattered.
You don't want to believe that Jason Mendoza doesn't exist.
Exactly. I don't want to live in a world without Jason Mendoza, I guess is my point. And whoever photoshopped, I think it might have been Joe V again, who photoshopped the bit about the shot of Chimer saying, "Anytime I had a problem, I just throw a thermal detonator. Boom. Now I got a totally different problem." Which is a Jason quote, but I think it's Molotov cocktail.
That's right. I forgot about that. Oh, that was a lot funnier now that I get it. Yeah.
That's how jokes work. We may be getting it's a little late here.
Yeah, I think we've hit our limit on all things. So 3 episodes left. A lot of stuff to wrap up here in these last three
Looking
episodes.
Looking forward to them.
I'm very much interested to see where we go from here. We will be back to talk about them all, and we will be back next week to talk about episode 6, whatever it's called. But I would like to once again thank all our listeners. Thank everybody who supports us by going to theincomparable.com/members and signing up for membership and getting all sorts of great perks, but also sending a little support to the show. We really appreciate it. We love doing this show, and we love that you love it. And I would, of course, like to thank my co-host, as always, Tony Sindelar. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Kat Benish, always a pleasure.
It's been a blast. Moment of silence for Yord and Jackie.
Thank you all. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll be back next time. But until then, may the Force be with you.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members.